ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I feel a bit angry about the situation. I'm like, I don't get how it can even get to that point, but just from a player's point of view, like, we just hope Ellie's all good. I'm going to say it. There's going to be fallout over this. Like, there's going to be some heads that'll roll because I do not know how Ellie Katoa was actually even allowed to take the field.
That is former Kiwi Rugby League international Sean Johnson speaking about Ellie Katoa. The reason Sean is angry? Well, the Tongan star needed surgery to ease pressure on his brain after a series of head knocks in the Pacific Champions clash between the two nations. The vision of Katoa being treated after the third instance, there's no way of sugarcoating it. It was downright confronting, and it has rattled many within the sport. The question everyone seems to be asking is how we got to that point, and the NRL is investigating. The case has raised new questions around an old problem. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Jack Snape is a senior reporter with The Guardian. He's covered this story pretty extensively. Jack, you're actually based in Melbourne. You know Ellie Katoa reasonably well. Tell us about him as a person, as a player. Who is Ellie Katoa?
Ellie Katoa, brilliant back rower for the Storm. He's possibly been the best player for the Melbourne Storm in the past two seasons, and they've made the grand final both years.
Right for Munster, floats it to the right edge for Hughes, grubber for the in-goal area, Ellie Katoa wins the race! Blitz the ball and the Storm score their second try to go to the lead! And that right edge, domination of Ellie Katoa, comes all the way to grand final day. Why should today be any different, Louis?
And he's known as a fearless competitor on the field, incredible challenger for aerial balls, and just an all-round great player and a beautiful individual. He's an excellent story. He grew up in a small town in Tonga, has come over respectful, hugely loved at the club, and indeed from everyone connected to him.
Try to Elias Akatoa! Try to Tonga!
Wow! That's incredible.
And where he's found trouble in the last 72 hours or so is playing for Tonga against New Zealand in the Pacific Championships. What happened over the weekend for Ellie Katoa?
It was a horrid day on Sunday for Katoa. In the warm-up before this match against New Zealand, he was playing for Tonga. He had a clash of heads, or maybe his head meeting the shoulder of his teammate, Lihai Hopewati, in the warm-up. Appeared to lose consciousness, was on the ground, but was cleared to play in the game. About 10 minutes into the game, he had another head knock when he copped the elbow of his teammate, Will Penasini.
Seen a player come from the field, Andrew.
It's Eliasa Katoa for Tonga. And remember, he got collected by Lihai Hopewati in the eye in the warm-up. And I think he's had a collision, friendly fire, from Saliva Havili. I don't know what Ellie's done wrong at training, but these teammates are out to get him. He's gone straight into the tunnel for an HIA.
Again, was cleared to return to the field, cleared what is known as a head injury assessment. And unfortunately, Katoa then had a third head impact in the second half, left the field, but his condition deteriorated and was suffering seizures on the sideline.
And it's New Zealand 30, Tonga 8. I see Eliasa Katoa is sitting on the bench. He's got, nearly can't see out of that left eye. He got a knock from Lihai Hopewati in the warm-up and then friendly fire 9 minutes into the game that resulted in stitches.
Good decision by the coach to take him off.
Was taken on a Medicab, emergency surgery to prevent some brain bleeding later that night. So just a nightmare scenario for Katoa on Sunday.
Yeah, the vision of him being administered oxygen on the sidelines was super confronting. How is Katoa now, to the best of our knowledge?
We've heard from him thanks to his Instagram. He posted on Monday morning in a touching post, just an image of his arm following surgery, thanking people for reaching out to him and apologising for not being able to get back to them yet. That's all we've heard so far. People connected to him, Melbourne Storm, they haven't given us any more updates, just saying they're focused on his recovery.
So how is it that he was allowed to continue playing, given what you've just outlined there?
Well, that's what we're all trying to find out. The NRL issued a statement on Monday night saying they are looking into the scenario, and there's been a lot of focus on how Katoa was initially allowed to take the field and then the handling of those subsequent head impacts. Christian Wolf, the Tongan coach, has defended the Tongan doctors in the wake of the accusations that perhaps Katoa's health wasn't looked after.
No, look, the doctor's done the usual HIA. We've got two very experienced doctors there. They've done their usual HIA. He's passed all that and passed all that well. And you know, my job's not to question doctors. As I said, they're both comfortable with that and comfortable with him coming back onto the field. So you know, I don't think there's anything to worry about there in terms of the process. Unfortunately, I think he's copped a second hit that's quite heavy and obviously has been a bit of a poor result on the back of that.
What we do know is that if a player has two head injury assessments, they're automatically out of the game. So this was three in a day. I just want to understand, help me, walk me through it. How does that happen?
This is a widely understood part of the NRL's concussion guidelines, that if you have to have two head injury assessments in one game, the player cannot return to the field, even if doctors clear him of any major injury. The odd thing here was one of these occurred before the start of play. And so whether that has been built into the protocols in a sufficient manner will be one of the areas the NRL looks at. Another aspect is the role of the independent doctor. These are doctors that watch the game via the video bunker and can pick up potential concussions or at least symptoms that suggest there may be a serious head injury and inform the club doctors that are there on the ground. All this stuff will be looked at as part of the NRL's investigation, and hopefully we'll find out just what happened.
I suppose another question is what the actual guidelines for head injury assessment involve.
There is some concussion guidelines or protocols, as they're called, provided to each club as part of their operations manual. The Rugby League Players Association has a copy, and generally as journalists, if we have any inquiries around this issue, the NRL is typically happy to help. But the concussion protocols are not a public document, at least at that elite level. The NRL publishes guidelines for the community level, but we don't know the exact clauses, the exact rules, the exact laws of, for example, what happens with independent doctors during warm-ups.
I wonder with the knocks that he did cop in this game whether he should have played at all after what happened in the warm-up.
And those are the questions at the heart of this issue today. And hopefully this process will illustrate exactly what those guidelines or protocols state and really whether they're delivering on their promise to make the NRL as safe for players as possible.
I wonder if this is the kind of case that might potentially drive greater transparency in a space that feels something of a grey area right now. What's your feel on that one, Jack?
No doubt about it. This is a hugely prominent instance with horrific consequences. Even if the rules were followed, it's great that these are in the spotlight to ensure that they're up to scratch, they are reflecting best practice, and ultimately this situation does not happen again. This is a crucial issue for the NRL, making sure that they can tell parents that they're doing everything to protect the players in their code and that they can feel confident in allowing their kids to play the sport. And so how the NRL handles this situation, vitally important for the future of the sport.
And concussion has been an evolving space. I mean, there have been instances of players being pulled in recent games and big, big games too. I'm thinking of Ben Hunt in the grand final or Stefano Utoikamanu in a recent international. And then to hear Junior Polo of Samoa speak about his concerns yesterday following this Eli Katoa story.
You know, we as footy players probably will never say no to turning up for, you know, your country and getting out there and playing, but whoever this sort of falls down to, there is protocols around there and probably should be followed and probably were followed, but in terms of putting your health before your job is probably the main sort of outcome that you really want to take out of it.
I mean, it felt illuminating. I just wonder, how do we think players across the game would be interacting with this story, whether it's internationals on rep duty, you know, in various far-flung corners of the world, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, but whether it's players in their off-season watching this unfold on their social media feeds and their various news sites, how do you expect players might be interacting with the Eli Katoa story?
Over the past decade or so, rugby league players have become aware that their sport is dangerous. And when matters like this occur, they spark an extraordinary outpouring of concern for those involved, but then concern that maybe this could be them at some point in the future. Having spoken to players, there is a balanced perspective on the threat of brain health. Many see it as a necessary risk to chase a career of their dreams and earnings that might eclipse anything else they could do. Others look at it more of a concerned perspective, thinking they don't want to risk their future earnings after they retire, or indeed their way of life, by suffering brain health damage during their playing career. So the response to these issues will be mixed, but the most important thing is for the NRL in this situation to address those concerns of players and show that their focus is on player safety and making sure that is the priority.
Jack Snape from The Guardian, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat.
Headlines. Do you remember when we told you jockey Jamie Mellum knee car was the big story in this year's Melbourne Cup? Well, she's just proved us right by becoming the first woman to claim the Caulfield Cup Melbourne Cup double. Victorious at Flemington aboard Half Yours. Here's the closing stages of the race.
Half Yours takes the lead from Goody Two Shoes, Middle Earth River of Stars. Half Yours is coming clear for Jamie Carr for the Cup's double. Half Yours, the history maker, won the Lexus Melbourne Cup by 3 lengths. Half Yours, the winner.
Mellum is the second woman after Michelle Payne to claim the cup. That happened a decade ago. Take a listen to the reaction from the 29-year-old after this massive victory.
What just happened? Oh, my God. This is what we do it for. This is why we get up out of bed every morning, 4 a.m., work our asses off for the last 15 years I've been in this industry. It's tough. It's not all glorious and perfect, as everyone can see sometimes. Oh, I've had an amazing year. Got married, had some really great days on the track, but nothing ever compares to this feeling right now I'm feeling.
The father-son training duo of Tony and Calvin McAvoy were understandably jubilant in victory too.
Yeah, wow, what a horse. He's just continued to raise the bar.
What a joy. This is our great race, and it's just so special to win it. Incredible moment. Like, from the days we grew up, Melbourne Cup was everything, and it's been a great race for the McAvoy family. Karen winning it 3 times. My brother Philip owned a horse that ran second in it, and now for me to be able to win it, and for us to be able to win it, it's just amazing.
Goody Two Shoes was second from Middle Earth, and River of Stars in fourth. Cricket. And we knew he was back, but Manus Labuschagne's really labouring the point. He made it 5 centuries in 8 innings as he made 101 from 111 balls for Queensland in a one-dayer against New South Wales on Monday. 3 of those tons have come in white ball cricket, with the other 2 in Sheffield Shield. Perhaps the only question around his place in the first test is where he might bat, opener or perhaps number 3. We're expecting the squad to be released a little later this week. On the bowling front, Brendan Doggett was brilliant in the Shield over the weekend for South Australia, and he's told media he's going to be ready should the call come for him in the Test series with England.
Been waiting for this for a long time, so yeah, I feel like if I do get a call to join that squad, I'll be ready. And then, yeah, see what happens. Just trying to keep a low profile. Not really used to this. So, it's just one, trying to get back out in the park and stay fit. And, obviously just putting good performances for South Australia.
Finally, rugby league, where the Gold Coast Titans have had an ownership shake-up with a consortium of movers and shakers buying minority stake in the struggling rugby league club under the belief they can turn things around. That group includes ex-players like Matty Johns and Gordon Tallis, as well as investigative journalist Hedley Thomas. Intrigued to see how this goes. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Jason Ford. Thanks to Channel 9 and the Play On Sports Show for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.